Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former All Japan Pro Wrestling All Asia Tag Team Champion, of course, the former Smoky Mountain Wrestling Tag Team Champion. He's one of the legendary Fultons, Mr. Jackie Fulton. Welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be on. I want to say hello to all the great wrestling fans out there.
So you got a big show coming up in Ohio. I always mispronounce the way you say it, but I know it's a big show in Ohio on the 11th, of course, of March.
That's right. Yeah, it's Chillicothe, Ohio. It is kind of hard.
Chillicothe. There you go. Yep.
Yep. Coming up a week from Saturday, March 11th, right there at the OUC Shoemaker Center. We got all kinds of great guests. We got the Fan Fest starting at 12 o'clock. And then the big show starts, the Super Show starts at 7. It's called Glory Days. 4 people are going to be inducted into the Ohio Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame. One of them being a local wrestler named Farmer Bob Miller. Another one is Superstar Bill Eadie, everybody knows. Another one is the great referee Tommy Young. And last but not least, my dad, Big Jim Hines. He helped my brother get started in promoting back in 1977, so all 4 are going to be inducted to the Ohio Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame.
That's awesome. Reunion 2, of course, the Glory Days Bash. You guys always draw a big crowd there in Ohio. I mean, it's nuts trying to follow it to see what promotions are doing well. And that it's like 1,000, 1,500. I mean, it's always a lot of people you guys draw over there. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, more than that, yeah. Yeah, we got my nephew Dylan. He's a great promoter. My brother, Bobby Fulton, Jimmy Hines, he promoted for years. Like I said, him and dad started in 1977. You got the combination of experience and the technology of Dylan, and they form a great team, and they do an awesome job. And they're expected to, they're hoping for about 4,000 or 5,000 people at the Shoemaker Center.
Wow, damn, nice. Even better. You guys always draw well, so I could see, you know, it drawing a decent house for sure. You guys always do well over there.
This one's looking better than the other ones, and the other ones have been awesome.
When you look at this show and other shows and you being a part of it, did you always think like, oh, I got to be in the wrestling business? Dad's promoting. My brother's a famous wrestler. Did you always think I have to be in the business? I love the business, or no?
Not always. I went to college. I got a teaching degree. It was in health and physical education. And there weren't hardly any teaching jobs. And when I didn't get one the first year, I missed competition. I played baseball and mainly football throughout my youth. And I played at a small college football. And I always loved to work out. And I loved competition. And I missed it. And my brother was doing well. And I called him up one day and said, do you think you can help get me in the wrestling business? And he said, I'll do everything for you I can. And even with having a brother already there, already established, you got to get in there and you got to learn. And you got to wrestle in front of sometimes 50 people. You got to run up and down the road, pay your dues. And I did that. And after a few years, I finally got the opportunity to go to Japan, and that worked out really great for me.
Man, what a career. We'll get to Japan in a second. I was amazed how many years you were there. I knew a lot, but man, more than I even realized. When you initially started in the business, did your brother train you?
Yeah, well, he was living in Dallas, and I was living in Wilmington, Ohio, where I went to college, which is an hour from Chillicothe. He was trying to start a school, and he came up for like 2 weeks and trained me. 2 weeks, Monday through Friday, I believe it was. So I had like 10 training sessions, and then he went back to Dallas, got busy, never really got the school off the ground. And I started wrestling for a couple Ohio promoters. One was Jim Lancaster, but I only wrestled like 5 matches in 2 years. And, you know, it's going to take you forever to learn at that rate. So I finally, my brother called Bill Dundee up. Bill Dundee had taken a book over at Continental down in Montgomery, Alabama. And Bill said, send me a picture. I sent him a picture. He called and said, do you still look like that? Sometimes people send me pictures of 10 years ago. I said, that was about 2 months ago. Yeah. So he had me go down. I went to Tennessee to his house. He had a school. He had me and Jamie, his son, get in the ring and do 2 or 3 spots. Luckily, what Bill called were the 2 or 3 or 4 things I knew how to do. One of them was throw a drop kick. And he saw me throw a drop kick and he said, you can work, mate. Let's go. So the next day we went to Montgomery and did a TV taping. Then he saw how green I was. But he didn't send me home. He kept me there. I was there about 3.5 months. And then Bill decided to go back to Tennessee, and Robert Fuller took the book over, and it was a small territory, only 6 baby faces full time and 6 heels. So of course Robert brought his own guys in, and I was the first, I'm sure, because I was the greenest to be released. So I came over to Charlotte, and my brother and Ivan Koloff started a wrestling school about that time, and I would help them train guys, and I was still getting trained myself. Work with my brother as his tag team partner 2 or 3 times a week, you know, 12, 13 shows a month, and learn from one of the best.
When you look at that and you're doing that with your brother, is that like a great feeling? It's like, wow, man, like I kind of made it a little bit, you know, I'm getting it, but I'm working with my brother. Like, was that a cool experience?
Yeah. He was hard on me, which was good. It was good for me. You know, I'd get out there and think, man, I did good tonight. And then on the way home, you did this wrong. You did this wrong. You did that wrong. So, but that's how you learn. My brother's never been known to sugarcoat things. And that's how I learned. Yeah. Working with him. And eventually I wanted to go to Japan. And it took a little while to get booked over there, but Lord James Blair's, I sent him a tape of me and my brother working at the school. We went hard for about 15 minutes, Japanese style, and sent it to Lord Blair's, and he took it to Baba, and they ended up booking me later on.
That's great. A lot of pressure, though, for being Bobby Fulton's brother. You know what I mean? Because he's a great worker. The Fantastics are world-renowned. You know, they're known as being – was that a lot of pressure getting in and being his brother?
You know what? It was a little bit. It's tough when you're stepping in somebody's shoes like Tommy Rogers. And I never got in it to try to be the third Fantastic, but that's just how it worked out. I know a lot of fans probably still to this day say, you're not the real Fantastic. And I've never really tried to be. Me and my brother were just trying to make a living. Tommy was living down in Florida, my brother in Charlotte. And, you know, some people didn't want to fly another guy in. So we started working as the new Fantastics. We got some WCW television, which helped our independence out. I never really wanted to try to replace Tommy, but that's just the way it worked out. And I wouldn't recommend that for any young wrestler. Get your own gimmick, you know, get your own gimmick and be your own guy, because the fans, you know, they're always going to think of Tommy and my brother, and rightfully so, because they were a great tag team.
When you look at it, though, with Tommy Rogers, how was the relationship with him? Was he like, oh, I'm the Fantastic, or he didn't have a problem with it?
We didn't argue or have words or nothing, but I'm sure he was thinking. Here's a good example. When I first went, I went as Jackie Fulton, my first Japanese tour for All Japan. Tommy and my brother went as the Fantastics. That was in January '92. In May of '92, we got the itinerary, and they had me and my brother as the new Fantastics, and Tommy Rogers and Dean Malenko under a name, I think it was called the Sunshine Boys, because they were both from Florida. Tommy saw that and went right to the office and said, me and Bobby are the Fantastics. And so they put Tommy and my brother back together again, and it kind of left me, well, just by myself, which was fine. Sometimes we would do six men, and Dean Malenko didn't have a partner. It ended up being a blessing for me, because but that same trip, Del Wilkes came over for the first time as the Patriot, and they were pushing him through the roof. He was getting over like crazy. He looked great, had that great body, great worker, big guy, you know, 6'3", 4", 290, 280 pounds. And rumor had it that they were going to try to find him a partner. By the end of that tour, the office had talked to me and asked me if I was interested. And of course I was interested. I knew that was it was an upgrade for me, because instead of going like three times a year, I would go 6, 7, 8. And eventually I started going on all 8 trips a year. So I said, of course I'd love to be his partner. So they said, we want you to be called the Eagle. And I said, that's fine. And they went from there.
Where does that come from, the Eagle and like the gimmick? Where does that like emanate from?
Well, the Japanese office thought of it. They wanted it to be something patriotic also. And they wanted me to wear his same tights, except have a little bit different mask. It was their idea. And, you know, I was listening to whatever they wanted me to do. I was just happy to have a job, because, you know, the unemployment rate in wrestling today and even back then was pretty high.
Did you like the gimmick, though? Did you think like, okay, I could work with this, this is good? Or were you like, I'm just doing it because it's a job?
I kind of liked it. But once again, I was a replacement. You know, I was like the second Fantastic, the third Fantastic, whatever. And then I became like the second Patriot. So once again, I liked it. And, you know, they were pushing us. They put the All Asian straps on us. We beat Kobashi and Kikuchi, I believe, in 1993. And I loved working with Dale. He was a real nice guy. He was getting over. And I loved it. And I loved the fact that I was going a lot.
What did you think of the culture over there and the lifestyle? Was it like culture shock, or did you like it over there? What did you think about Japan?
Yeah, it's definitely different. You know, Tokyo's so crowded, you can't hardly walk down the sidewalk, and it was different, you know, at night, lights everywhere. But I loved it. The people were nice. I loved the food. Some of the Americans would go over there and say, oh, I can't stand this food. I love their food. I would go over there and gain 10 pounds on the tour, eating so much Korean barbecue and all the sushi and all the great food in Japan. So I loved it, but I will admit I had never been out of the country. My first tour was a 30-day tour, and I had never been out of the country that long, and I couldn't wait to get back home. Then I couldn't wait to go back again.
Did you speak the language at all?
Not much. I probably end up knowing 50 or 60 words, which I forgot about most of them by now. But I wasn't really great at picking up a foreign language. I knew some words. Like I said, it's been 15 years or so, even longer since I've been there. So I've forgotten most of it. But I wasn't like Richard Sling or Terry Gordy's nephew, who was a young boy, or Mauna Kea Mossman, Kea, who lived at the dojo. They learned how to speak really fluent Japanese. And I was nothing like that, no, because you really didn't have to. Most of them spoke English, except for maybe a smaller town at a restaurant. But most of the big cities, the Japanese spoke English too. So you're really not forced to. But I wish I would have tried a little bit harder and picked it up better. Yes.
Who do you go out with? Like when you're going out, do you go out with the Japanese guys? Do you go out with the gaijins? Who do you go out with when you go out?
Gaijins. We all stayed together. Yeah. You never. Once in a blue moon, one of them might come and take you somewhere, like Tenyu did, pick two or three of us up, you know, later on, and it would take us out to eat. But no, normally you don't eat with the Japanese whatsoever. You eat with each other, you know, and we all had our little groups that you hung out with. But we ate together. The gaijins all ate together.
Who was like your crew? Who was like in your gaijin crew that you go out with?
It was Dale Wilkes and Doug Furness. Us three kind of hung out together. Abdul the Butcher, I would go out with him sometimes. He would he had a lot of sponsors. A lot of guys taking him to real nice places. You know, you get to eat and drink for free. And he liked me for some reason. I'm glad the Butcher always treated me great. I have nothing but good things to say about Abdul the Butcher. And he would take me along sometimes. And you get to eat all the steak you want without spending a dime, you know, or without spending a yen, I mean. And Butcher treated me good. But, yeah, it was mainly, you know, I was there a long time. Dell ended up going to WCW. Me and Doug would still eat together. He ended up leaving, going to WWE, him and Danny Crawford. I would eat with Ben Peacock, Kamala too. Me and him got along really good. When I went to Continental, Ben was there. And I would wrestle him a lot. First, second match. And Ben was kind of experienced compared to me. And Bill Dundee would get on me every night and say, "Your punches look like shit, Jake. You got to lay him in. He's got that big old belly. You're not going to hurt him." So I would hit him harder the next night. Same thing, three or four nights in a row. Finally, I was punching him about as hard as I could. And he actually ended up leaving. He just took the midnight train, didn't show up to any more shows. And I was just listening to my boss, thinking, "Oh, my punches look bad. I got to make them look better." But I ended up being good friends with Ben over there in Japan, and we would eat together. And I told him that story. He said, "Jackie, you were killing me with those punches." And I said, "Dundee said they look bad, so I was just laying them in, Ben." But I would eat with him a lot. And later on, Steve Armstrong came over. Me and him would eat. Just different guys on different tours.
That's great, though, that you got to, you know, catch up with him and tell him, because he probably hated you for years. You know what I mean? You get to catch up with him.
Yeah. I at least gave him the reason. That was the truth. Yeah. I was thinking, I don't think they look bad, but the boss says they do, and he's been in the business 30 years. He knows more than me. So, yeah, I got to tell him that, yeah.
Did you like Dundee? Just kind of going back for a second on him. Like, did you like Bill? You like working for him?
Yeah, because, you know, he gave me a break. And like I said, he saw how green I was after a day or two, and he could have sent me home, but he didn't. He gave me a chance. He kept me there. And I love Bill Dundee. Yeah. He helped my brother out immensely too when he was starting. He didn't have to keep me there. He could have sent me packing after a couple of days, but he didn't. So, and he's actually the one that named me Jackie Fulton. When I wrestled my four or five independent matches in Ohio, I was wrestling as George Fulton. And he said, "Can I change your name, mate?" And I said, "Sure." And he came back with, Fabulous Jackie Fulton, of course, kind of took it from Fabulous Jackie Fargo. But I didn't know that because I grew up in Ohio watching the Sheik's territory. You know, Bobo Brazil, the Sheik, Flying Fred Curry, Pampura Furpo. That's who I watched. I really didn't even know who Fabulous Jackie Fargo was. But after a week or so, they dropped the Fabulous name and just called me Jackie Fulton.
That's great, though, because you know, it's a cool name. You know what I mean? And you didn't even realize the history behind it, but it's a cool name. And obviously, he knew the history.
Yeah, the fans would say, did you take that from Fabulous Jackie Fargo? And no disrespect to Jackie, because I know he's a legend, one of the biggest legends in wrestling. But I didn't get that television, so I didn't know him. So I would be like, who's Jackie Fargo? Well, I found out soon.
What did you think about, like, when you were a kid watching wrestling, what did you think about the business and, like, who was your guy? Like, were you a Bobo Brazil guy? Did you hate the Sheik? Did you fear the Sheik? Like, who'd you like?
I love Bobo, and I really loved Flying Fred Curry because I loved his drop kicks. And I loved his dad, Wild Bull Curry, Pampero Furpo. I loved the baby faces. Tex McKenzie was another one I remember. Someone told me later that knew him, said he wasn't that great of a worker. But as an eight-year-old kid, I loved Tex McKenzie, the big six-foot-six cowboy, you know. He was another one. I liked the baby faces. I hated the Sheik and was afraid of the Sheik, but I loved watching him, especially live. We went to Dayton Hare Arena when I was probably 12 years old, and Andre the Giant was a special guest there. And I didn't know, I didn't dream that 15 years later, me and my brother would be in the same wrestling ring in Japan for All Japan wrestling against Andre the Giant. I never would have thought that, but that came true. I end up wrestling Andre three times.
Wow. I didn't realize that. That's amazing. Was he moving around much at this point or not much?
No, sir. No, it was late 92. I believe he passed in January 93.
Yeah.
It was six mans. They would put him with two young Japanese boys. And it was me, my brother, and the Patriot one time. Me, the Patriot, and Joel Deaton another time. And I can't remember the third one. Probably me, the Patriot, and Joel Deaton again. But no, sir. He wasn't moving around that well. We worked around him. He stood in the middle and we bumped our behinds off. And he got in a little bit and did his few things and then got out.
So he's not taking any bumps, obviously, at this point.
He did not leave his feet, no, sir. Actually, the one time he beat me, toward the end, he wouldn't sit on your chest like he used to do because he was older and he couldn't stand up, you know. So what he did with me is he just put his boot on my chest, 1, 2, 3. It was still an honor, though.
Yeah. To me, it's still so crazy that he literally was wrestling like 6 months before he passed away. Because it's like, wow, I can't even believe he was out there to begin with. Because in WWF in 91, remember, he was walking with crutches and stuff, those arm crutches. It's crazy to think that he was wrestling in Japan in late 92.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd have to check it, but I think it was January. I remember coming home from a tour. And I worked an independent show around North Carolina. And on the way home, I heard it on the radio. The legend Andre the Giant has passed. And I was like, oh, my goodness.
Andre the Mighty Anau and Ogawa defeats Bobby Fulton, Jackie Fulton, and the Patriots. So you and your brother got the team against them. That, cool. All right.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And that was before I was wearing a mask. I think I worked him once as Jackie Fulton and twice as the Eagle. Because the tag team tournament was November into December. And that's the first time I was the Eagle, and me and the Patriot were teamed up. So yeah, that was the first time I was the Eagle. So we probably worked them twice on that tour.
Like as a fan, like in the United States, I was like, Andre, he was done in 90, you know, after WrestleMania 6, he left. No, he's still wrestling for two more years. That's just amazing to think. It's awesome to get in the ring with him, even though he couldn't barely move. I mean, one of the biggest legends ever in the history of the business.
Oh, he was the biggest in my opinion. Yeah, a lot of times nowadays when someone finds out somehow that I used to wrestle, they go, well, who's the biggest name you wrestled? And I say Andre the Giant, and I don't think they believe me, but I don't care. I know the truth.
Yeah. But that's awesome, though, that basically, you know, his last run, you get to wrestle and lose to him, which is an honor, too. You get to, you know, take the pin from him.
It was a complete honor. Yeah. And the magazine even had a picture of him standing on my chest getting a 1-2-3.
Oh, that's awesome. Very cool. Man, it's just crazy to think that he's still going then, you know, 92. Wow.
Yeah, bless his heart. And, you know, he lived in just outside of Rockingham, North Carolina.
Big farm, right?
Yeah. And I actually, he worked an independent show or two around here. I know North Wilkesboro, North Carolina, a guy by the name of Carl Brantley, who ended up, who wrestled as Vladimir Koloff. Ivan Koloff took him on as another nephew, Vladimir. He ran a show and he got to be friends with Andre. Because Carl's family owned a farm too, a ranch. So Andre was at his show one time. And so, yeah, he was still working independence and still going to Japan some.
And you wrestled Vladimir a couple times, right? In Smoky Mountain, him and Ivan was a little bit of a feud, right?
Absolutely.
The Fantastics against the Koloffs, yeah.
Yeah, we all trained Vladimir, Ivan and my brother, and I was helping train him too. Like I said, I was still learning, but I would get in there with them guys. And so, yeah. And I think it was my brother's idea. My brother was running a show in Ohio and said, Ivan, I'm going to make him a Koloff if you don't mind. And Ivan said, I think that's great. Because, you know, he was big. He was about 6'2", 300 pounds. Yeah, he looked a lot like Nikita. He sure did.
Is he still alive? Is he still?
Carl? Yes. Yeah. I believe he is. I believe he is. I haven't heard from him for a long, long time, but I believe he is.
Do you have the picture of you and Andre from the magazine? Do you still have that?
I'd have to look. I would have to look it up, but I still have it. I still have. I have a bunch of old Japanese wrestling magazines and programs put away in storage. But I would have to look it up. But I do still have it. Yes.
So when you're over there in Old Japan, what's the relationship like with Giant Baba?
You don't really go around him too much. He kind of sits there in his big chair. And with his wife, you know, Mrs. Baba, and you don't talk to him too much unless, I don't know, unless there's, you know, I asked for a couple raises over there. So I would go and talk to him then. And that's about the only time you talk to him.
How's the pay? How was he as far as pay?
It was good. I was happy with it. You know, you got to remember it was 1992, but I was real happy with the pay. It was better than running up and down the roads, putting 500 miles a night or 300 miles a night on your car, tearing your car up. You know, you go over there and get that cash at the end of the 3-week tour or 4-week tour. Or in February it was a 2-week tour. And it was good. I loved it. I was saving money. And like I said, not running around tearing your car up like a lot of the wrestlers did back in those days.
Did you mind the flights, though, and flying back and forth? Because it's a 14-hour flight, right, or 12-hour? I mean, it's a long flight back and forth.
It's 5 hours from Charlotte to L.A., and then another 12 hours from L.A.
Oh, it's even longer. Damn, okay.
Yeah, because you're going against the jet stream. But on the way back, they would let me fly all the way. I would leave Tokyo and fly to Atlanta, and it would take 12 hours because you're going with the jet stream. I would leave like on a Sunday at 12 noon to come home and get arrive in Atlanta Sunday at 12 noon.
So, yeah, right. True. Yeah. Yep.
Major jet lag both ways.
Is that like, oh man, I got to take this flight. I mean, the flight home's not terrible, but oh man, I got to take this flight over there. Was that kind of like taxing after a while? Because I mean, you flew over there, God knows how many times.
Yeah. I think I had 52 trips over. Yeah. But at least they flew us business. And the seats are bigger, and they treated you like a king. They fed you great. Whenever you wanted something, it was Japan Airlines, and they would treat you like a king. Drink as many beers as you want. That's what I would do. I would get on there and chug down a few beers and eat my big old steak, chug down a couple more, and wake up in Tokyo.
Nice. That's the way you should do it. Pass out a little, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I remember my first trip. You know, I was completely excited, of course, because I knew this was a big opportunity. You either pass or you fail. And most guys go over there once and never, ever go back. Most. And I was excited. So I looked around. Everybody else was sleeping. All the other wrestlers, all the other boys were sleeping, and I'm wide awake. But then the next day, you got to get out there and you got to perform, you know, even no matter if you, you know, if you're jet lagged, if you feel horrible, you got to get out there and kick it in for 15 or 20 minutes. But it seemed like the jet lag always hit worse coming home. Took 2 or 3 days. It almost felt like you had the flu. And we're completely exhausted for 2 or 3 days. But, yeah, the frequent flyer mileage was great.
Oh, yeah, true. Who's, like, the booker? I know Bob, obviously, is in charge, but is he the booker himself, too? Like, who was the booker, and was there a separate booker dealing with the Gaijins? I know, obviously, the talent intermingles, but, like, who's booking you guys?
Yeah. Fucci did it for a long time. The travel agent was in Los Angeles. His name was Mr. Inna. He would be the one to contact you normally. Fucci booked it for a while, and man, my memory's going bad. In 92, it was an older guy that used to run right before intermission. I cannot, for the life of me, I cannot think of his name. I can't think of his name. But like I said, Fucci was for a long time. But after I got in there with Dell, they gave us our tours. They say you come boom, 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 boom. And that was nice because you could set up everything around that as far as independent shows or vacations or whatever. And it was nice to know when you were coming back. Before then, we would leave without knowing pretty much. And then suddenly Mr. Annie would give you that call. And, you say, okay, I get to go back to work. But like I said, when I got in with Dell, they started giving me and him our dates for the whole year. They don't do that with everybody, though.
What did you think of, like, Japan and the wrestling scene at that time? Because, man, go back and watch. I mean, all Japan is hot at that point. I mean, the crowds are nuts. They're always packed. You guys have the best gaijins. You guys might have the best Japanese wrestlers. I mean, it's pretty loaded in all Japan pro wrestling in the early 90s.
It was amazing. I mean, I had wrestled for WCW some and saw some big houses, but I never saw standing room even in the aisleways like I did there. And a lot of times, like I said, we were working independents and, you know, small crowds. To go from that to seeing Stan Hansen part the Red Sea with that bull rope going through those Japanese people, it was amazing. It was an honor, and I loved every trip.
Man, just thinking about Hansen and stuff, maybe the best gaijin of all time. I mean, arguably, you could say he was, but man, what a force over there. And obviously, he lived there full time, so it's not like they're flying back and forth. He, like, became a staple of Japan as a gaijin.
Well, actually, he did fly back and forth.
He did? I thought he lived over there for a time period. Okay.
Well, he may have for a few months before I got there, but from 92 until I finished up around, I think I had a tour in 2006. Of course, Stan retired before 2006, of course. But no, Stan would fly with it. He lived in Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh, wow. I thought he lived over there for a period of time. Okay, interesting. Nice.
Didn't marry a Japanese lady. Mm-hmm. And she lived in Jackson. But you might be right. Maybe in the 80s he stayed there for 6 months straight or something. I'm not sure.
What did you think about him, though? Because, you know, from a fan perspective, like, oh, this guy's a killer. Oh, my God. Like, holy crap. Like, this guy's nasty. Like, what did you think about Stan the Man?
Yeah, he was I really liked Stan. He was another one, like Butcher, that helped me out a lot. I really didn't like working him because you're getting in there, getting your ass kicked, you know? Not that I had a problem with that. When I was in there with him, that was my job, and I didn't mind doing a job. But it seemed like when Stan was in the match, even if he's on your team or against you, the intensity level of the match goes way, way up. And you got to – we worked hard every night, don't get me wrong, but you got to really kick it in gear when Stan Hansen was in that ring. You really do. So when you look – when they came and hung the sheet of paper, for a long time you didn't know who you were working that day until they would come there a couple hours before the show and hang it on the wall. And it was always a relief to get a young Japanese boy in the second match as opposed to being in the main event with Stan Hansen, you know. But He was great. And he was great to me. He actually took me and my brother out to eat Korean barbecue my first tour over there. And I don't know if he did that with a lot of guys, but he, when Del Wilkes got his contract to go to WCW, me and Del were on the next tour. It was Del's last tour before going to WCW. And Stan said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I'm staying here, Stan." He said, "Are you sure?" I go, "What do you mean?" He said, "Did you talk to Baba?" I said, "No, I just figured he would know that I'm coming." He goes, "You better go talk to him." And I thought, yeah, Stan's right. I better go tell him I still want to stay here. So that's what I did. Stan didn't have to pull me aside and tell me that. But it never crossed my mind that they might not take me because my partner's not coming. But I guess it should have. But I listened to Stan, and I kept right on going.
That's amazing, though, that you're thinking like, oh, you know, I'm definitely back. And they were like, nope. And he's like, you better talk to him. So, I mean, great heads up by him.
Yeah. And he didn't have to do that. But, I'm glad he did. And I kept on going over there. And they wanted me to get another partner. Came up with Steve Armstrong. They called him the Falcon. And that tag team never really got over. It just didn't. I don't want to bury anybody. Steve's a great wrestler, United States style, but the Japanese style, as you know, is way different. And he didn't do that well on it.
What do you think about that style? I mean, it's stiff, it's snug, whatever you want to call it. It's strong style. What did you think about the style? And I guess you kind of adapted to it while some others didn't.
Yeah, I love the style. I loved it. I loved it like it's a competition, me against you. Some of the people in the United States, like I posted a match with me and Araya on Facebook about 3 or 4 years ago. And a couple of the people said, "I can't believe how quiet the people were." Well, they were studying the match. The Japanese fans were so smart. They knew every hold. They would study the match. But as long as you had him going into that finish and you build it up, more and more and more, that was the whole key. A lot of people I think that I went to high school with are probably used to going, you know, the heel going out there and telling the old lady on the front row to shut up and sit down, or, you know,
yell
at the crowd. I think a lot of the people that that saw that were like, wow, the people aren't even making any noise. But they did at the end, and we got them with a good finish. But, yeah, I loved the style. You asked me if I loved it, and I did adapt to it. And at first I'd say I could work both American style pretty good and Japanese style. But some of the things that you do in Japan does not work here, that's for sure.
It just seems like some guys can adapt to that style and really, you know, mend with that. And some guys, it just doesn't get over for them over there. They don't get over.
Absolutely. That's the truth. You do got to lay your stuff in. They're going to lay it in on you. And I would, believe me, I would lay it in and I could take it. I never complained, never got mad, got knocked silly numerous times, but you shake it off and you go on and say, "Hey, this is the pro wrestling business, especially if you work for All Japan Pro Wrestling." But I love that style. I love it. It's like it had passion. You know, the people could, you can do this in the States too. And the States has passion, but you could look at people, you know, you could make that face, you could get it, you could sell and look at them people and get them. I don't know. I just enjoyed that style. And It was kind of stressful though, because the finishes were so long. And I would be back there going over it in my head over and over and over and over. I could not remember a 12-minute finish now. Save me. I'm getting ready to turn 60 in a couple of months. I would not be able to remember two or three high spots at the beginning and a 12-minute finish. But I tell you what, when you did get them people and it was a great match, there's no better feeling in the world.
And the funny thing with Stan Hansen, I mean, he just fit that style, that mentality so well. But also, which he said when I interviewed him a few years ago, he said he didn't see very well. So he had to make sure that it wasn't whiffing. I don't know if that's maybe a little bit of an excuse, but he wanted to make sure it wasn't whiffing on that lariat. He didn't see. He wanted to make sure he got you.
Yep, that's for sure. Yeah, Stan, you're right. We all knew he couldn't hardly see. And he would lay that thing in. I don't blame him. That was his finish. He made a lot of us a lot of money drawing him and Dr. Death Steve Williams and Terry Gordy and Danny Spivey and Johnny Ace and Crawford and Furnace. And it was a great crew. You're right. Probably the best Gaijin crew. I've heard that. My buddy Massa, I'm sure you've heard of him, probably the biggest Japanese fan in Japan. He always said All Japan in the early 90s, mid 90s was the best wrestling and the best Gaijins. We had a great crew.
What did you think about Johnny Ace? Because everybody has, you know, their own story about him. Did you get along with Ace? Did you like Ace?
Yeah. He's kind of cutthroat, to be honest with you. I got in there pretty good. And even after Dell left, I was in pretty good, even though when I brought the Falcon over, it didn't get over. Anyways, I was in pretty good with Baba. I mean, I didn't try to be. There were a couple times before the shows when everybody's stretching in the ring or just sitting around or lifting weights, Baba would sit down next to me and say, you know, I want you to change your collars. That's one time he sat down and talked to me. I don't want you to be red, white, and blue anymore. I want you to come up with your own collars. So anyways, Ace saw him talking to me, I'm sure, and everybody else did too. And so I kind of quit putting up with Johnny's stuff a little bit. And like, I'd smart back to him if he'd say something, you know. But later on, Johnny got more and more and more powerful over there. Where when I went back as George Hines, I just kept my mouth shut if Johnny would say something to me.
He had the stroke.
Yeah, when he got in with Mr. Baba and Mrs. Baba, I thought he just got lucky. Then he gets in with WCW, I'm like, wow, that might not be luck. Then he gets in with Vince, WWE, I'm like, that guy's a master at selling himself.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. I mean, my God, worked for WWE for over 20 years.
Yeah, then I guess he got in that big scan, got in that trouble, right? I've heard, don't know what was true, but I guess he's released in Allen Wrestling right now, I believe.
Yeah, I heard he showed up at AEW when they were in his hometown, so I don't know if they'll hire him, but watch out, you know what I mean? Watch out over there, guys. Yeah.
My nephew Dylan just told me that. He's here with me today, and he just told me that.
Well, Brian Danielson, it's his son-in-law, so that could be the part of the reason, but you never know. There might be something else going on.
Oh, is Daniel Bryan? I didn't know that. I didn't know he was a son-in-law.
Yeah, Johnny Ace is married to the Bella twins, their mother, and Daniel Bryan is married to Bree, one of the daughters.
Yeah, I did not even know that.
So Johnny Ace, always known as a little cutthroat, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, Dylan said he was hanging out with Dean Malenko down there in Florida, I guess.
Oh, that would make sense, too. Okay, yep.
He was a bit cutthroat, no doubt about it. One thing about it is, even after wrestling with all of us, all those tours, he never really tried to get any of us in to WCW or WWE. I believe, I don't know. It's like maybe him saying, look where I am now. You know, I'm in the office, Vince's right-hand man, and you guys are still over there taking bumps in Japan. I heard he tried to help Bart Gunn get back in, but they said Bart had too much heat.
Really?
I did.
Wow.
When Johnny was in WCW, I did call him and say, hey, can I come in there and work a dark match and, you know, try to get a job. And he did. I did do that, but I never got a job, and the matches were good. So, and then I think he told me, I was about 36 at this time. I think I remember him saying, we want guys, unless you're established name in the States, like Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, we want guys 25 and younger. And I'm thinking, well, why did you even have me come here to work this dark match, Johnny? If you knew you weren't going to, they weren't going to hire me.
Right. So he's being nice, but then the other end, like, what are you being nice about? We're getting hired. That's the reason we're here.
Yeah. Yeah, Joel Deaton, I've talked with him a few times throughout the years. You remember Joel Deaton?
Oh, of course. He was on this run with you in All Japan Pro Wrestling, of course.
For a while, yeah. He always said that about Johnny. He said he never got one of us, never got any of us a job. And that's the truth.
Yeah, it does seem like, I guess you could say selfish in a way, but yeah, he wasn't helping all the guys that he worked with, for sure.
I mean, he'd been on tour for years with all of us, you know, and was he in WWE when Dr. Death Steve Williams went in there before that brawl for it all? I don't think he was he?
No, he was still in All Japan.
I was getting ready to say maybe he helped Dr. Death, but no, Dr. Death helped himself.
That was Jim Ross for sure. Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. They go way back. Yeah.
What did you think of the Japanese talent that was in All Japan Pro Wrestling? Because we're talking about the Gaijins being awesome. The Japanese guys, Kobashi, Kawada, Misawa, maybe the three best ever as far as Japanese wrestlers. Got to be up there. Jun Akiyama is great. I mean, Tenryu was there for a time. Jumbo Tsuruta is a god. I mean, there's so many awesome Japanese guys you wrestle too.
You're right. They were great. They were great. I loved it. They were great. Yeah, you named some awesome ones. And I was in the ring with every single one of them that you mentioned, and it was an honor to be in there. And I've been asked before, who would you say is the number one? It's tough because there's so many great ones, but I would say I like working with Kobashi probably the best. Kobashi worked hard every night, even if it was a smaller town, he would bring it every night. And a couple of the guys, they would take a night off or two, you know. But then when the Budokan came or the Tokyo Dome, Mizawa and Kawada, they would kick it in. I'd be like, okay, I guess they are the tops.
What did you think about Misawa's elbow and Kawada's kicks? Were they stiff or just as a fan perspective, it looked stiff?
Mizawa's elbows were definitely stiff. Yeah, definitely. He laid them things in. Kawada's kicks not so bad. He was great. And they looked like they'd kill you.
Yeah.
I remember him hurting me at all. But they looked incredible. He was just great. He was great. That big elbow from Misawa, yeah. That was in there every time.
When you look at all those guys, who are some like your favorites of the Japanese to work with?
Yeah, Kobashi comes to mind first. Akiyama was good to work with. Ogawa, Omori. I remember when Omori was a young boy just starting out. I think he got to be a big star later on. I remember when Ogawa was getting beat all the time. And I think he ended up being Mizawa's partner when they left for Noah. I every single one of them I loved working, even the young boys. I was on the tour when Akiyama had his first match ever against Ted DiBiase.
Wow.
Single match, first match ever. Teddy beat him because Ted came back as Stan Hansen's partner for like half the tour. And then he hurt his neck and he had to go home. Ted might have been on two trips. I can't remember if he hurt his neck on the first trip he was back with Stan or the second one. But yeah, I remember Akiyama's first match.
Pretty amazing to think, because I mean he's been around for 30 plus years now. He's like the old veteran showing up to some of these shows.
I am.
Did you ever think about going to Noah? I know, really, if you think about it, from 92 to 2004 you're in All Japan Pro Wrestling. I mean, that's quite a freaking run. You said 50 plus doors, but did you ever think about going to Pro Wrestling Noah?
Yeah, they contacted me a couple months after the split, and it was a guy named Ken from he was from Hawaii. And he said they want to know if you want to come over. I asked for a big raise. I didn't know what to do. I knew Mrs. Baba had the money. I knew they had the TV and took about all the talent with them, except for Kawada and Fuchi and Kappa, the referee, and Tiger, the ring announcer. They took everybody else. I didn't know what to do. And I asked for like 1,000 more a week, and I never heard back. So I guess that was a no.
Yep.
But hindsight, looking back, I should have went for the same money, because they're still running, aren't they?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I might have been over there once a year just as a special guest, or once every 10 years or something. But I didn't know what to do. I honestly did call Johnny Ace up when Ken called me, and I said, "What would you do, Johnny?" And he said, "Man, I don't know." He said, "Same thing I just said. Mrs. Bob has got the money. They got the TV. I really don't know." So I said, "I'll say yes, but ask for a raise," and they weren't going to do that.
Giant Baba dies. You know, the mass exodus, if you will. I mean, that was really a big shot to All Japan. I mean, that kind of killed. And Noah became gigantic. Obviously, New Japan was huge too, but I mean, Noah became gigantic.
Yeah. Yeah, they, I was supposed to be off that July tour. What was it? 2001 or 2000, 2001, I think. I was supposed to have been off, and I had a girlfriend, and her and I had planned a trip to Spain. Bought her tickets, hotel, had everything ready. She was off that week of work. And, Mr. Enda calls me like 4 days before the tour. Mrs. Baba wants you to come over. And I didn't know what to do, because you didn't turn them down. I never did. But I said, "Mr. Enda," I said it as nice as I could. I told him the truth. I said, "I got a girlfriend, and we got a trip planned to Spain. And we've already paid for everything. And I said, tell Mrs. Baba I'm so sorry. But I didn't know. I would not have planned this trip." And I said, if it was just a trip by myself, I would just cancel it. I said, but there's someone else involved. And I said, please tell her I'm sorry. And he did. And he called me back and said, she wants to know if you could come over for the first show at Corcoran Hall, which I could, because I wasn't leaving until a few days later. They flew me over there for that one show at Corcoran Hall, July of, yeah, was it 2001 or 2002? They split. I don't remember, but,
like 2000, I think.
Might have been 2000. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Anyways, she said, you can just work this one show and I'll fly you back home. I go, okay. And I was in there like a six-man or maybe a tag match. And Kawada was going to beat me with one of his kicks. And the people were starting to get into me as a underneath babyface underdog. They were starting to get into me, you know. Because when I came back as George Hines, I had already wrestled 25 Japanese tours or so. So I went back with a bald head and a big old ugly beard. And the people were like, who's this George Hines guy? But anyways, a couple years later, when I was telling you about the big split, I worked against Kawada, and his finish was giving me one of them kicks to the back of the head. I don't even think Kawada knew that I was leaving. I was only there for one show. I sold that. I sold it, and I made him carry me out of that ring and into the locker room. Kawada was, I saw it on YouTube. Kawada was like saying, come on, get up. He wanted to shake my hand, you know, because.
Yeah, yeah.
I sold it. Respect, I would not. Yeah. I would not. And Bart Gunn was my partner. And Kawada, after they carried, the young boys finally carried me out, he held Bart's arm up, you know, like, I guess like solidarity for Mrs. Baba and All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yep.
But because of that, everybody thought I got hurt, because I was suddenly gone. And I came back like a tour later. Corcoran Hall was going, Georgie, Georgie, Georgie. It got me over big time.
That's awesome.
It was awesome.
Job is awesome. Yeah.
Thank you. Even going to the bus, I sold it. The next day when I was going back to the Reed Airport, there were some Japanese fans there. I sold it. I had a towel wrapped around my neck. I sold it all the way until I flew out of the country.
That's awesome. That's the true blue worker. You know, you got to sell, baby. Yeah.
That helped get me over. And you know, because there for a year or two, I'd get like three tours of George Hines, but then boom, eight.
That's awesome. See, yeah, look at that.
Yep. It pays,
got you noticed. Yeah.
Pays to be a team player sometimes.
So as we start to wind it down, head towards the finish here, I know Smoky Mountain Wrestling, you were in kind of in and out. Was that something you wish that territory was around longer, or you were so deep embedded into All Japan Pro Wrestling, you didn't really care about Smoky Mountain Wrestling too much?
Well, I wanted Smoky Mountain to do well because, you know, my brother and Jim Cornette go way back. And, you know, the boys need places to work, you know. But I was focused on Japan. It was way better money. Like I said, you didn't have to drive your car all over the mountains and back. That's kind of why they finished me and my brother up, because I kept – Jimmy Cornette would have this angle with the Heavenly Bodies, Stan Lane and Tom Pritchard, and then all of a sudden I'd say, Jimmy, I got to go to Japan the whole month of July. So one time they acted like I blew my knee out. They worked the angle like I blew my knee out.
Right.
And then I came back with a knee brace on. But after missing, screwing his angles up over and over, they finished us up. Plus, they were ready for Rock and Roll Express to come in as well. But no, I want to Smoky. I wish Smoky Mountain was still going on.
Oh, of course. Yeah. When you look back, though, it's All Japan. That's just it. Better money, better prestige. Like, you were kind of built for Japan, so to speak, rather than the States.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I could kick it in and be a heel, believe me. Me and my brother are great. I don't know if anybody out there has ever saw me and my brother Bobby Fulton, Russell Hill, but we're great heels. But I just love that Japanese style. It reminded me of, you know, true competition, you know? I mean, wrestling in the States is too, because believe me, there's all kinds of competition in the wrestling business. But I just love that style. I love laying it in. I think sometimes at Smoky Mountain, a couple guys got mad at me because I was laying it in a little bit too much. But I didn't mind if they did it back. But I loved it. And when I would spin kick somebody, I would lay it in. I didn't try to kill him. I didn't try to hit him in the nose. I tried to hit him in the chest. But sometimes you don't know where it lands. My drop kicks, and I started doing this jumping bicycle kick when I went back as George Hines. And I would lay him in. I would lay him in.
Do you have a favorite wrestler that you wrestled? I know we talked to some of the Japanese guys, but just overall, your favorite opponent or maybe a couple favorite that you had?
I really loved working Kikuchi and Kobashi, especially that all-Asian match. That match, I've never seen it on tape. I don't even know if it's out there on tape. But that crowd was on fire. It was summertime, and that building wasn't heated. And the crowd was into every single move from the beginning. I loved working those guys. Kikuchi could sell like crazy. Kobashi had that fire, could make them great comebacks. And I loved working them all, but those two stand out the most.
Now, as we close it up here, I want to mention, of course, one final time, Reunion 2, the Glory Days Bash in Chillicothe, Ohio, 3/11. There's a huge autograph signing earlier in the day, and of course, the show later on that night. Just give us one last push and where everybody can find some info and ticket information for the huge show coming up on the 11th in Ohio.
Dylan. Say it real loud, Dylan.
Facebook World Classic Professional Big Time Wrestling.
Did you get that?
Yes. World Class Big Time Wrestling on Facebook. Yes.
Yeah, World Classic.
World Classic Big Time Wrestling. Yes.
Yep. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We appreciate it. It's going to be a great crowd. If no matter where you are, even if you don't live in there, come out there. Sting, Rob Van Dam, Arn Anderson, Dylan's little brother, Jaren's making his wrestling debut.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Against, listen to this, Brock Anderson with Arn Anderson in his corner. Jaren Fulton, my nephew, Dylan's little brother, with my brother in his corner. and Kerry Morton with Ricky Morton in his corner. That's going to be Tommy Young's going to be the referee. That's going to be a special match. I'm going to be out there watching that one. It's Jaron's first match. I can't imagine all the pressure he has on him to be in there with all those legends and the other guys. Yeah. Four titles?
Yeah.
Four titles. For the NWA Junior Heavyweight Championship. Your nice. First match ever in front
no
of four.
Pressure. No pressure, right?
Yeah. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, what about you as far as social media and stuff? Are you out there? Do you do social media?
I'm on Facebook only. Yeah, Facebook. Yeah.
All right. So everyone head over to Chillicothe, Ohio on the 11th of March for Reunion 2, the Glory Days Bash. It's going to be huge like it always is for the Fultons and World Classic Big Time Wrestling over there in Ohio. But Jackie, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I really appreciate this. It's an honor to be on your show and to talk to all the great wrestling fans out there. And we'll see you on down the road.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.